This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Radio 830 WCCO, News Talk 830 WCCO. Joining us right now, the one and only Matt Burke with a lot to talk about. Matt, how are you? Staying warm tonight?
I guess so, Maxie. How are you?
Good. Did you like playing in the cold when you played?
I did, just because growing up in it, you know, I'm guessing like most Minnesotans. I mean, what's cold to me, what's cold to us is not is really cold to other people. So I always felt like it probably affected more, especially – you know, majority of guys in the NFL are from down south, so when that mercury dips below 40, they get a little uncomfortable.
Wait, did you ever play in a real snow blizzard?
No, not really. You know, but certainly played in some cold ones in Green Bay and Chicago over the years, but never a true snow game, unfortunately.
Yeah, everybody wants one of those, don't they?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, especially linemen, because Lyman, you're probably about the same speed as you are in a dry field, but it just slows down all those athletes, and you can finally catch them.
Hey, U.S. Bank Stadium was busy yesterday, but now with football, 12,000 kids, Catholics, young people for a mass. Explain how that came together.
Yeah, so there's a great organization called CISCO, the Catholic School Center of Excellence here in the Twin Cities. Richard Schultz, the founder of Best Buy, is a big supporter of it. And it's to help bolster the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese. And they did this a couple years ago at CHS Field. And this year they went into U.S. Bank Stadium, and the Archbishop celebrated Mass, and all 79 Catholic schools in the Archdiocese were represented. So that was about 12,000 students. So it was cool to see that football cathedral transformed into a real cathedral for a day. And what was also really cool, Maxie, was the Knights of Columbus was a sponsor. And if anybody knows anything about the Knights of Columbus, they know that they are a ginormous Catholic men's fraternal organization that is really about putting faith into action. And so they encourage the kids. Just about every kid came with a winter coat or a winter item to donate. And all those coats and articles were brought up as an offertory. So it helps those kids think about other people and hopefully get them into the habit of helping those who are less fortunate.
That's pretty cool. You know, as your kids go through school, depending on your point of view as a parent, but faith, especially if you send them to a private school, that's a big part of it. As a parent, when you were a kid, what do you learn about that? Does every kid click for them at a different time? Do some kids, does it just become white noise, the spiritual experience or the goal to make it a spiritual experience when you're in high school?
Well, you know what? I mean, it's all different, right? We're all on our own journey. I mean, I don't think you can be overexposed to good things like the faith. But, you know, when you're a kid, and we're all kids, we have parents, right? Parents make decisions for us. And if parents choose to pass the faith on to your kids, you know, you do that the best you can. Obviously, that starts at home. Hopefully, if you choose a school to it's kind of your partner, you hope that they're teaching the same things that you're trying to teach at home. It has to start at home. But then, you know, at some point, we all become adults. We become teenagers. We become adults, and we have to figure out our own beliefs.
Yeah, free will, right?
Yeah, and ultimately, we have to claim that faith as our own. But you know, I like to think I send all my kids to Catholic school, and you know, maybe there's a lot of stuff that they're not getting that's going over their heads. But you know, hopefully those pilings are being driven deep, those seeds are being planted, and someday my kids will keep the faith. And you know what, the thing that I particularly appreciated about yesterday. I mean, being a Catholic is one, the Mass, that's central to our beliefs, but two, also bringing that article of clothing, helping out the less fortunate. I don't care what religion you are. If you're a Christian, we know that Jesus talked about helping out those who were the last, the least. And yep. You know, I think that for young people, that's a great way for them to encounter Jesus.
Yeah, that's a choice you can make, right?
100% every single day.
Yeah, and there's enough minefields and battlefields out there to fight to get you to where you want to be, and enough little voices in your head that try to keep you from it. That is pretty cool. So do you think the awesomeness of the experience of having 12,000 together is by itself incredibly motivating for the kids?
Well, that's what you hope, right? You hope to create a unique experience that they never forget, and this giant shared emotional experience. We also had some great entertainment there as well. I mean, obviously you can't bring all 12,000 kids in at the same time. There's a lot of downtime before and after.
Sure.
So had a great band, local band called Sonar, does a great job. And so the kids are, they're down in the field and they're dancing, and it's upbeat. And like I said, you give them that experience that they'll never forget. And some of them never been to the stadium before. Some of them might never be back, but,
sure.
You know, they're going to drive by the stadium, and that stadium's going to be there for decades. And when these kids are adults, when they see it, or when they watch the Vikings game, they'll say, oh, yeah, I remember that one day that I was there, and that was a great experience. So hopefully it helps them on their journey and helps them ultimately, you know, find this way in the crazy world that we live in.
Let me ask you a couple sports-related questions. Jimmy Butler's situation with the Timberwolves, where he comes back yesterday, puts on a show, does an ESPN interview, then he didn't go with the team to Milwaukee, so obviously it was a one-day deal. If you're sitting in the locker room with a teammate like that, how does that strike you? Or most players just like, hey, man, not my deal. I got a contract here. I just got to do what they tell me. What is it like inside a locker room when you have a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on teams where guys didn't want to be there. And, you know, it's unfortunate. But you, first of all, you're being paid to do a job, so you make sure you take care of your business. And with something like the Jimmy Butler situation, you just have to defer to the powers that be and know that they're going to take care of it and do the best job that they can with a bad situation and do what's best for the team. You know, but I think back to, I guess, you know, maybe when I was a kid growing up. And you know, it's the world we live. I'm not saying it's bad or it's worse. I don't want to be, you know, like the old guy saying, get off my lawn. But
right,
players nowadays have so much power.
Yep.
Which is good in a way, because players are the product.
They're the show.
And they're partners with ownership. They should be making millions of dollars because owners are making millions of dollars. But it's too bad when you're. I mean, also we're talking about team sports here, and when one guy can kind of hold a team hostage, and Jimmy Butler's a great basketball player, and I don't know all the, you know, all the facts, and maybe he's got great reasons for wanting out, and I'm not going to delve in and start rumor mongering or start trying to decipher what gossip is true and what isn't. But you know, nobody's really winning in this thing, right? I mean,
new
Butler, he's going to probably get what he wants, but you know, at the end of the day, if my kid asked me about Jimmy Butler, I'm going to say, hey, you know what? You're on a team, and you might not like all your teammates, but they're your teammates, and you're going to get along with them, and you're going to be a team guy. And so it's going to hurt his image. Obviously, it's going to set the Wolves back because he's a great player, and obviously what he did last year for this team and how many more games they won than the year before. You know, they're going to be back to starting square one. They're not going to get equal trade value for him because everybody knows that Jimmy doesn't want to be here. So it's just... It's unfortunate. You can say, well, that's the business and this and that, and you know, I guess that's a necessity. But you know, at the end of the day, we just want to watch sports, and we don't want to have to deal with things like business or politics. We just want to see great athletes go out there and compete.
When is it okay or appropriate for someone to get in another player's face internally? Are there kind of rules of thumb and a hierarchy? And did you in your career ever have a time where you go, wait a second, you're out of line there? I mean, how do you know if you've been empowered or if you have that or what's acceptable and what's not when one person gets on another or feels that they have that kind of power control to do that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I think that just comes back to effort. You know, you can't always control performance in professional sports or in life, but you can control effort and preparation. And if you feel a guy is not given effort and not given preparation, then, you know, that's what you can confront him on. Now, do you have the status or the rank to do that? You know, sometimes there's only one way to find out. And you know, normally if you call into question a guy's effort, you know, really what you're doing is you're calling out his character.
Yeah.
And most guys don't take too kindly to that. So it's a very uncomfortable situation. But you know, the guys that do that, the guys that are the leaders, their house is in order. They don't go around calling people out all the time, but just in situations. And normally, if you know, a good leader will know when it's appropriate, and most of the other guys in the team will have his back and will have felt the same way. They just don't feel that they're empowered to be able to do that. But that's what you have to do as a leader. And you know, it's kind of one of those things that you know that the confrontation or the conversation or the interaction, it's not going to go very well initially. But hopefully, you can remain civil and you can get to a place where you accomplish what you want to get accomplished, where ultimately it's like, hey, you know, we support you. We need you. And we need you to try harder. We need you to do better. And, you know, I think you want to do the same thing. We're all on the same team, but you gotta give us more.
And many times coaches with a wink, I mean, they want players to patrol the locker room, don't they?
Well, that's what the good teams do. I mean, the head coach, right? He's ultimately the judge, jury, and executioner on a lot of things. But the great teams, a lot of the stuff never gets to the head coach. It does. Great teams police themselves. And, you know, it's always more effective coming from one of your peers than the coach. Because if the coach is out, is doing all that stuff and always having those conversations, then, you know, that's the coach has got other things to worry about as well.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, it ends up falling on deaf ears, and then it kind of creates this coach versus the players situation inside a team, especially when losing streaks happen or when bad seasons happen, and then that never ends well.
Do you, the Vikings offensive line played well enough last week? In general, do they have a good enough offensive line, or have they game planned around it because they've gone short pass instead of trying to pound the run?
Yeah, I mean, they'll have to manufacture some offense. You know, you saw like a couple handoffs to Stephon Diggs and some of the quick passes, which are, you know, basically like long handoffs. But, you know, I think it was a positive step, not just for the entire team, but definitely for the offensive line last week. You know, they ran the ball well enough, but what was important was they came out and tried to establish the run early, and they did. They ran the ball effectively early, which meant, you know, if you're the Eagles, you know, defensive coordinator, you're thinking, okay, well, now we got to adjust because they're running the ball on us, and then that opens things up in the passing game. You know, it's interesting. I think it's just from Coach Zimmer. You know, you go in with a game plan. The first quarter is what you game plan for during the week, and then you see, okay, how'd that work? And usually some of the things work and some of the things don't. And then the second and third quarters are all about adjustments. Okay, they're doing this to us, so we got to do this. We're not doing this well, so we got to change this. And then the fourth quarter is just, I mean, basically this guy's going out there and making plays to win the game. But that's the chess match that goes on every single week. You have a plan, but it never goes according to plan. And you constantly have to make adjustments after each series and depending on the situation. But the Vikings did a good job of executing their offensive game plan early last week, and they were able to build a lead.
And last, Kirk Cousins, I don't know if you know him or not, but what have your impressions been of him so far?
I don't know if it could be any more positive. You know, I mean, from a play standpoint, I mean, he's been dynamite. You know, some of these balls that he's thrown, yeah, you see him a couple times and you think, well, that was kind of a fluke. That ball was so good, it must have been a fluke. But yeah, every single week he's dropping passes in there. He's spreading the ball around, and he doesn't have the greatest protection. A lot of these pockets aren't super clean, but he's not rattled. You know, a guy gets close to him in the pocket, he doesn't bother him. He keeps his eyes downfield. He steps into the throws. He's doing a great job. And off the field, I thought, I mean, he, I know he's the real deal as a guy and as a leader. he's saying all the right things in the media after a loss. He's upbeat. They're asking about a specific player dropping a ball here or the O-line. He's saying, I believe in these guys. You know, there's his play demonstrates that. So, I mean, you know, you give a guy this historic contract and you think, well, there's no way that it's, you know, he can't be that good or he's not going to live up to the hype. I think so far it has. And I think that all the Vikings fans, and I think Rick Spielman especially, has got to be pleased with what he's seen so far.
Matt, always appreciate it. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you.
You bet. Matt Burke, nice enough to join us in WCCO. What has this weather done to the migration? Everybody's talking about it. We give you answers. That's what we do on Sports to the Max. That's what we do on... Welcome back, Sports to the Max. News Radio 830 WCCO. Shaletta, you ever gone duck hunting?
No, but my dad's a big duck hunting, any kind of hunting fan. But
is that down in Texas or what?
Yes, down in Texas. So he does squirrels, raccoons, ducks, pheasants, anything that he can get his hands on to shoot, he does.
In the Houston area or where?
He goes out in the country, the hill country.
Austin,
yep, mm-hmm.
But they're a little short on water in that area, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But they got some really good places there that he knows about. He calls them his traps.
They're called honey holes.
Oh, yeah. That's what you call them. Okay.
Yeah, if you got kind of secret spots, and you know, this is always good.
Don't tell anybody. Shh.
So you grew up eating game, huh?
Oh, my God. I grew up as a kid opening the refrigerator and seeing eyeballs and stuff.
Tails, stuff like that.
Tails and little fangs and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, oh, what we're having tonight? Tastes like chicken.
So that's what we always say. When in doubt, you just say it tastes just like chicken, right?
Just like chicken.
Yep, that's what you say all the time. Whenever it's our house too. Don't worry about it. Tastes just like chicken.
Don't worry about it. They always say, don't eat at the handy household. You never know what you're getting.
But he liked being outdoors, did he?
Oh, he's a big outdoors guy.
Well, he's going to like our next segment then. Graham Grass is going to tell us about the migration.
Okay? Oh, awesome.
Yeah, let's take a break. Come back. Think about what we're learning tonight at WCCO. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Joining us now, the Graham Cracker, Graham Gresseth from Maxed Out Guides. It feels like you should be out doing something if you can handle the cold. Graham, how are you? You staying warm?
Buddy. How you doing?
This is an unusual shift this year. Not the first time. I remember being in North Dakota. Oh, it's probably been 10 years ago now, and it was October 9th. I remember the date, and there was ice on the edges to get out to anywhere on a slough, and it really encumbered. It was a wind just like today, and it was snowing and blowing. And this is not as unusual as some people might think, but it's different. What have we seen here in the last few days with these temperatures getting this cold?
Well, yeah, it's a pretty unique system this early in the year. We've definitely had, we've had a pretty good push of birds here now for the last 10 days or so, and it's a little hard to tell exactly what happened until things calmed down a little bit. So tomorrow, I think today the wind was ripping. It was a northwest wind, 25 miles an hour. And tomorrow, that's going to calm down a little bit. It's going to get sunny. The birds will probably sit in the morning, but tomorrow night we should have a real good idea of what we picked up as far as new birds. But I would expect that with all the snow from Winnipeg to even Thief River Falls, even into Fergus, that western Minnesota had a pretty good push of birds here the last few days.
Where do you watch Winnipeg first? Is that your first if you want to know what's coming soon?
Yeah, a lot of our birds that are that show up out west come from Okhamic Marsh up there in Winnipeg, so. I watch their bird counts throughout the fall, and then I also watch their weather forecast to see what's going on there. And I don't know how much snow they got, but I know they were supposed to get between 5 to 10 inches yesterday. That's enough to really to shake things up and send some birds our way.
Does the snow move them more? Is ice the big factor there if they don't have anywhere to sit?
I've actually always found it's more snow. Okay. Heavy snow cover, when snow covers up the food source, that's really when birds head out of town. So especially, I don't know how much they got, but I can tell you out in Lac qui Parle, if we get we get those big snowstorms in early December, and if you get If you get 6 inches, you're okay. If you get 8 inches, you're going to lose some birds. If you get a foot, you're going to have a mass exodus. So
what do you do right now then? How do you hunt differently than you did a week ago? Are teal out of the question now and you become a mallard and diver hunt? What do you do?
Yeah, I would think, with all the rain that we had, obviously, there's definitely some opportunity for some flooded crop hunts. We'll be on those. We had one just the other day.
How'd it
that
go?
Worked out pretty well for our clients. Yeah, went real well. Real nice Canada goose and duck shoot, mixed bag shoot. The birds will definitely be feeding hard here in these next few days as they show up. Fresh birds that are hungry, that have flown a long way, are obviously pretty susceptible to decoy spreads. So we'll field hunt them and we'll hunt those flooded spots when we find them. And then usually after about 3-4 days, things start to settle down and those birds start to get into a new pattern and they're used to the area. And then you kind of wait for that next system again to shake things up.
Is it too early to set your spread of divers out?
I would guess that we don't hunt divers a lot, I would think there's a good amount of divers that showed up here in the last few days. I think if you've got a spot that's known to produce divers, I'd probably head out there this weekend if you could.
Freshwater shrimp is what you're looking for there?
Yeah. Yep.
Graham, the Canadian goose, now there's the locals that, of course, we shoot in September, the early season, et cetera. Do they make an early exit when it gets cold, or will they stick around for a while?
That's a little bit of a hardier bird. They will shift around quite a bit. There's a lot of shifting that happens even in September and not necessarily even those birds going south. They've found that Canada geese have a tendency to, they'll push north in late August and then come back in September. So they shift around a pretty good amount. I wouldn't expect, you're going to get some bird movement. But most of your local fowl, as long as they've got a good food source, they're going to stay tight. And then you just rely on those migrators to fill in.
Well, the nice thing about your field hunts is you're in a pit and you're nice and warm.
Yeah. That's the best spot to be on a cold day today. We had a group in a pit today and they were awfully happy to be there.
Was it just geese or did they get some mallards mixed in? What were you looking at?
A little bit of both. Yep. Yep. Some geese, some mallards and some wood ducks. So
wood ducks too, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wood ducks are still around heavy. We had a group out last week that was in a silage field that got into a really nice wood duck shoot right before sundown. So
last year,
they're still around.
Last year was a very good year for you. Can you get a feel this year so far? Is it going to equal last year?
With this system that we had, we've been really fortunate, Mike. We've had just an awesome year for Canada geese. There's a lot of people that have really struggled this year because of the poor hatch we had in April. And we were really fortunate. We've had a really great year for that. And we hadn't gotten into a lot of great duck hunts. We kind of pecked away at a few here and there, but nothing great. But this last weekend, we got into some really nice shoots. And with this water and the rains that we had this week, this will definitely turn on duck hunting. I mean, I'm expecting the next 5 to 10 days to be very good for ducks.
In your mind, is the perfect hunt when you're hunting both geese and mallards at the same time in a field?
Yeah, that's pretty tough to beat. I really like a good flooded corn hunt. Those are a lot of fun, like the one that you were out on last year. Those are
and you found some of that, some flooded cropland?
Yeah, yep, yep.
But you got to rest that too, right? I mean, you don't want to hunt that every day.
Well, you want to hunt, it'd be great if you could hunt it every day.
Yeah.
But no, if you want that spot to continue to produce, you got to let that thing rest. And we try and let them sit for 4 or 5 days in between hunts. But it just depends on the conditions.
And then you just watch it and see what's going in and coming out?
Yep, yep. We just watch them right at sunrise and sunset and see how the birds are using it. And then once we see that things are getting pretty crazy in there again, then we'll go back in there and whack them.
Now, this is unusual, though, because it's not even pheasant hunting season yet, and we're talking about long johns. Normally, pheasant hunting is when you pheasant hunt, if you're a real duck hunter, you pheasant hunt just because there's no ducks around during that time of year. That's the break in the action, but we're talking about northern birds already, and pheasant hunting hasn't even opened.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique year, that is for sure. I know we had snow in Canada real early last year, and I thought, wow, I don't remember having that much snow or having snow in Canada this early, and we have way more this year than we did last year. So Yeah, it's definitely unique year. It's been cold in the blinds the last few days. I got caught. I didn't have my my cold weather gear. Was back here in the cities, and that was out west, and that was pretty chilly last weekend.
Boy. I hope that doesn't mean though an early season and we shut down early.
No, I don't think it will. You know, that year that we had that, what was it, 5-6 years ago when we had that big storm on deer opener where we got, you know, 14-15 inches of snow on slug opener. That's about, you know, outside of that Halloween storm, I think when I was 10, you know, you just don't see those big winter systems that early. So even with this one, like I know Devil's Lake had probably 10 to 12 inches of snow. That stuff will melt, you know, they're going to lose some birds, but there's still a lot of birds north of them yet. So, you know, if we got something like this in mid-November again, like we did that one year, then it's a little bit tougher. Then you're going to shut the door pretty quick. But, you know, we'll have plenty of time for killing birds.
And when you hunt water right now, are you in sloughs mainly?
We had been, yep. Just some smaller sloughs and potholes and, that were holding ducks and like I said, now we'll kind of transition into those flooded spots a little bit more. And I think, like I said, guys, I want to get out on divers. This would be a good time for that. And there's this week, if it's good timing with fall break and MEA coming up, this would be a real good time for people to get out.
Yeah. Normally that's not always the case because sometimes you can get in a 65 degree day and you're going, you know, what am I doing here? But it looks like this year it's going to be really ideal.
Yeah, there's some years we sit out there in MEA and it's just, you just think, oh my gosh, you look at the forecast and think, you know, we always get lots of kids out there that time of year.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And you look at the forecast and you see the highs in the 60s and you're thinking, oh man, this is going to be tough. But this should be a good MEA weekend for the kids.
So maxedoutguides.com is where you can start, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. Hop on there and join our email list. You can follow us on Facebook and we try and keep everything. We just put out an email blast today and we try and do it about once a week this time of year. So
keep us informed, my friend. Appreciate it, Graham.
Sounds good, buddy. Thank you, Mike.
You bet. Graham Gresseth, geeseforus.com, maxedoutguides.com. I went hunting with him last year, stayed in their lodge, and then went out into a flooded cornfield. And I know to many of you that doesn't mean much. But what's great about being in a flooded cornfield is you're in a food source for the ducks. And I know to many of you that doesn't mean much. But you also have natural cover because you're standing in corn, so you don't have to build a duck blind. And then I went out there later and hunted with them in the field. Festus and I went out there. And Festy's got a pretty good feel for it. He shot a lot of ducks already this year talking to him. He was out with Sasquatch just last week, I think. He said they shot a bunch of – well, the opener, I guess, he and Sasquatch and Flabby – I think it was Flabby, too, shot a bunch of I'm not sure if Grumpy was there or not, but they shot a bunch of teal. And it sounded like they had a very good shoot to open the season. And then I'm not sure if he's going with Sasquatch again. I talked to Festus the other day, but just by text. So I'm not sure if he and Sasquatch were going out again. But I think they still felt there was enough birds in the area that they could go out. So anyway, last year Festus and I went out there and we sat in the goose blind for an afternoon, had a lot of fun. When those geese come in and they come in low and they look at your decoys and because they honk for so long, you can watch them for a long time. You can kind of enjoy it. It's kind of like you get to have a three-course meal. You get the salad before and a little soup and then the main course comes. Same thing with geese because they're so loud as they come, so you get to watch them for a long time. And Festy and I dropped a couple of birds there for sure. We had a good day out there, a nice day out there, a fun day out there, and we were with Graham's group both times. So it's fun stuff. The thing about getting out and hunting is that if you're out in the open air, I got to tell you, man, it's like being on the water. Your problems just kind of dissipate for a little while. You just kind of get to leave planet Earth for a little while, or planet Earth in that bubble that everybody lives in a bubble, right? You live in the bubble that is your house, your job, your family, etc. And if you're wondering why guys like to go hunting, it's because you get to leave the bubble for a while. You get to go kind of refresh yourself and remember, jeepers, there's all this stuff going on in the world that has nothing to do with my bubble. And there's a fox running along, and all he cares about is catching that mouse, you know, and there's these flocks of geese, and all they care about is getting down south safely. You know, and then you go into the small towns and you realize that their issues are different than the ones that you're facing, you know, and you talk to the farmer and you realize all he cares about is making sure that it gets dry enough now that he can go harvest. And everybody's got a different bubble they live in, so everybody's got different issues, but it's so healthy to leave your own bubble once in a while and be reminded of what's really going on out there. Take a break, come back. This is Sports to the Max. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Al Malmberg with a scintillating preview on the other side. Well, welcome back, Sports to the Max. Joining us now, Al Malmberg. It is cold here, brother, and I think it's cold where you are too, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at 57 tomorrow. We're shivering.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you, next week we're looking at lows around 12 degrees, I believe, on Monday and Tuesday, with highs, not much better. So we're going to have that cold snap right out of the gate. Then summer will return. Hey, Maxie,
yeah.
have you heard this unfettered enthusiasm of this little 2-year-old boy who's a huge Colorado Rockies fan?
No.
And he's in his high chair in his home in the kitchen, and they've got the ball game on. And we played this last night, and Hammer was laughing so hard, and I thought, you know, I bet Maxie hasn't heard this either. This is huge in Colorado. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Here it is.
Leading off and playing center field from the Colorado Rockies, Charlie Blackman.
I can see why that got a little bit of play.
Oh, unbelievable. This little boy, I mean, that's...
I hate to break his heart. Did you tell him about the Brewers beating him?
You know, I bet that kid
it happened after his bedtime, you know?
Probably, yeah. Oh, man, unbelievable. Hey, I heard you talking about the duck hunting and when you get into that blind and the world just goes away.
Yeah.
You are so right.
And don't you have to have a place? I mean, when you're with the horses, isn't that what that's like?
Yeah, but you got to keep a wary eye on horses.
Yeah.
It'd be just, you know, you just don't want to get caught between a fence and the horse. That's not a good scenario. You just got to be aware. But you know, right? It's when you go flying.
Oh, sure. For you flying. Yeah.
Everything goes away except for what you're doing in the cockpit.
Yeah. And you just concentrate on that, which means you're not concentrating on the other stuff.
And it's so relaxing. I remember the first time I took Kathy up, we're flying along. She hates flying. And so I picked a perfectly sunny day, no wind. It was calm. And we went out to the airport and we took off and we're flying around and it was just beautiful. And I said, I find this so medicinal. It's so relaxing. On the way home that afternoon, she said to me, around the freeway, she said, remember when you said it was medicinal and how relaxing it was? At that exact moment, I was thinking how frightening it is.
Isn't that something? The same experience for two people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I really appreciated when you were talking about that, because you do get lost in that, and it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
leave the bubble,
You know, the foxes going after the mice and, you know.
Yeah, you realize that's all he cares about today.
Yeah, that's the one thing. That is it. That's it. You know, and that's fun.
Hey, and you better have something like that you can go to, right? Doesn't have to be hunting or flying, but you got to have something.
Every person has to have a fire in the belly, don't we?
Yep.
Hey, did you hear about this devout Buffalo Bills fan?
No.
He died. And he took. This isn't a joke.
I thought you meant there was only one, and then.
He died. He took one final dig at his team in his obituary. He requested 6 players as pallbearers.
Yep.
So that they could let him down one last time.
Oh, jeez. And that made the paper, huh?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, that's huge. I mean, lifelong Buffalo Bills fan. And he just wanted to see one win in the Super Bowl. That's all.
And Buffalo, of course, beat the Vikings, but they'd been plagued, of course, with their good teams. They couldn't get over the hump, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, just like the Vikes, 4 losses in Super Bowls. You know, and he just wanted to see one win. You know, he even had a T-shirt made, and he's being buried in it that says, "Just one before I die."
Just one. the power of the NFL. Hey, what's coming up on the show?
Well, we're gonna talk about all kinds of things, and we're gonna get into some politics, and we're gonna talk about the hurricane. I'm sure you've seen the damage.
Yeah.
And we're gonna read a letter from Christopher Scalia that he wrote about what his father, Justice Antonin Scalia, would have thought of the Kavanaugh hearings. And we're gonna talk about,
interesting.
And we're gonna talk about Herschel Walker, calling for CNN to fire Don Lemon.
Yeah, that's interesting too.
Kanye West criticism. There's so many things going on. It, you know.
Yeah, Kanye shows up at the White House to let cameras in. You've got some pretty good something going on.
Boy, he went into a dialogue, didn't he?
He did. He did.
Unreal. So that we're going to be talking about that stuff.
Good. I'm looking forward to it then, because I just did sports stuff for a bit, so I can leave my bubble and listen to Al Malmberg. Hey, appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, Maxie.
You bet. Al Malmberg coming up next. We're right here. Where's right here? News Talk 830 WCCO. Back here tomorrow night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.